when you are a pastor, you see behind the end of the church. And it's not the magnificent hind end that Moses saw, but the real asshole. I was serving a church at that point in North Central Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania people tend to be fairly conservative. I'm much more liberal. I have been supervising interns, all of whom were second career. I was envious of them because they had done something else in their life and I never have. I went right from high school to college to seminary. It was ordained in 1980. And was looking forward to my sabbatical time as an opportunity to read and reflect and decide where did I want to go from here. And found that my time at Holden was liberating in many ways, and my object is this. Do you ever hear the play, or the movie, The Unbearable Lightness of Being? You know, I had a sense of experiencing some of that here, from going to, from a very fairly conservative area, to a place where I attended a class here of queer theology in the year 2000, and was able to introduce my 10-year-old daughter to the teacher of that and his partner. And I just talked to her on the break, and I said, I asked her how Holden influenced her, and she says, oh, well, I think it helped me to be open-minded. I said, I have found being a pastor a very isolating profession, very lonely. I create wonderful community for other people that I cannot fully participate in it myself, because people have expectations of what I should be and where I should be. Since I moved to Florida, I found that people are a little bit more adaptive in accepting me. I recently called my brother a former prick to one of the members, and I impressed him in a positive manner by using that word, you know. So, but in my family, I have fundamentalist, sister and brother, and that's always been an influence. I found a book when I was here called Stealing Jesus, How Fundamentalism Betrays Christianity. Found that a wonderful book to read. And really found that Holden helped me so much because I didn't feel so isolated being a liberal Christian. And so I thought, other people think this way too. And other people are accepting and open-minded. And to sit in a class and have women talk about, what if my son is gay? You know, how am I going to handle that? And be open to talking about that. I think it has helped me be more bold in my preaching and my teaching, to give a more liberal viewpoint and not be ashamed of that, not be afraid of doing that. Recently, somebody phoned me and wanted a speaker from Jews for Jesus to come and speak to the church. And I said, well, you need to tell me a little bit about your organization. You know, if you are Christians who say that people need to have a conversion experience and accept Christ as their personal Savior, then you wouldn't be welcome here. And he says, but don't all Christians teach that? And I said, no. And we got into a very long discussion on the phone with me telling him about Stealing Jesus, a book called If Grace Is True, Why God Will Save Every Person, that I just recently read, written by two Quaker ministers. I talked to him about Philip Yancey. I never would have had a conversation like that before. I wouldn't bother thinking it was useless. And now, instead of feeling like the fundamentalists have all the power, I have experienced that liberal Christianity has a lot more power. Grace is what empowers people. And we recently had a lesbian couple join the church. When they first came, I went to my husband and I said, I think we have our first gay couple. And I was like, yay! And, you know, they both have talked about how the congregation has transformed their lives to come to a place of acceptance and peace. And, when I left Holden, right before I came to Holden, I and another pastor in my conference in Pennsylvania had written a letter to the editor in response. response to a conservative Christian columnist, local columnist, who had implied that all Christians were of one mind in condemning homosexuality. So we wrote a letter giving a different perspective, saying that gay people were welcome in the churches that we served. And when I came home, my first day back, one of the women in the parish had saved all the letters to the editor that had been written in response to our letter. It was a file like this deep. And I'm paging through it, paging through it, paging through it, and I find the letter written by my Lutheran colleagues condemning John and I as heretics, and saying that we had made a novel departure from the Christian faith and that we had made the God the author of sin. And I immediately called John, and I said, did they talk to you? You know, I've been involved, and so they did me. Did they talk to you before they sent this letter? And he said, not a word. Mm-hmm. And the author of the letter, he and John had lunch every week. So it's like, whoa! You know, so I had come from a remarkably accepting liberal community to that. And that's what led my husband and I to begin to say, it's time for me to write. It took me 2.5 years because the woman that worked against me at that point in my ministry was my husband. Pardon?
And this is what you said just the last time.
The woman that worked against me for the first time in my ministry because I was ordained more than 20 years ago. And so, but now I'm in a fairly good place and feel that I can continue in parish ministry. And I really don't have any choice. I'm a breadwinner now. My husband's Parkinson's disease, and he can no longer work. He's been on staff here since May 1st. I encourage you to come. You know, you have so many things that you can no longer do. I was hoping being in this place might give him a sense of what can he do with the rest of his life. And we'll see what comes of that. But at least I can be at peace, knowing I can probably make it to retirement and still working this lonely job.
Object is a t-shirt that I thought better not just trip off of me last night during worship. Save it for today. So, the t-shirt that says Grace Happens, given to me by my closest friend, who's been to Holden a few times, but we've never been here together. And he's a guy that I met at the seminary in Chicago. And his name is Eric. And he needs a lot of grace. That's why he put that in his t-shirt. He's a pastor in Aberdeen, Washington. And this is, you know, Holden. Grace Happens here. All kinds of surprising ways. A couple of stories. Well, first of all, we came here because of, I need to say some names. Jerry Swanson invited us to Holden. He's a campus pastor at Cal Lutheran. Was instrumental in getting us to travel this far. And also Rudy Edmond, he's a professor at Cal Lutheran, Bible professor. That's the first story that I'll treasure always about Holden. And he's hiking up to Donkey Lake with Rudy Edmond and fly fishing with him on that lake when he was probably, I think he was 80 at that point. Eating fruit soup with him, which he enjoyed. Some Scandinavian. Grace Happened 1990 in a lot of ways. The first little story is I was asked to lead the Holden evening prayer service. And I was in seminary at that time and I had heard it a few times there. We got a little group that met on Fridays. And led it, and at that point we were still saying Abba Ima for the Lord's Prayer. And so I led it that way. And this is just a good whole thing. Not understanding that another big name around here, Walt Bowman, was on a real big kick about this inclusive language stuff. And so immediately after the service found me and just laid into me, I mean, just spitballs coming out. you're in seminary, blah, 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 blah. How would you do this? And I just was shocked. I was just couldn't believe it. The grace happened when staff coordinator that year, a woman was, program coordinator was Barb Rossley, who intercepted Walt. Thankfully, because I had no idea what to say to him. First year in seminary, and she intercepted him and sort of calmed him down, and I began to watch grace in action as she handled his anger very, very gracefully. Another story was the other program coordinator that year was Dana Spencer, and Jerry Swanson had kind of introduced the idea that maybe you could be homosexual and Christian at the same time. This was something that was very foreign to me growing up in San Diego, where in my youth group, the cool guy was someone who went out on weekends occasionally to beat up gays in the local parks when they found them. And we all thought that was the thing. He was the big tough guy. So this was going to be a big maneuver to sort of change my mind on all. But living and working with Dan Spencer, grace happened. I was able to sort of become transformed around understanding gay and lesbian people in a whole new way. And that only, I think, could have happened through the experiences at Holden and hearing the story that he's been sharing. The understanding of scriptures in new ways as well. Sometimes grace doesn't happen in Holden. This is a place where relationships move quickly to death. And sometimes too quickly. And I watched a couple of friends suffer the consequences of that. Friends who were married and who came here, and one of the spouses experienced that movement to death rather quickly, and it caused them at least to shake the foundations of their relationship, and I think in ways that were, you know, completely false contexts, you know, that Holden can create. One that did end up break up. And so I've seen the hurt and the consequences of that side of the gift, you know, in community that can sometimes happen with sinful things that we are. This has been a place that we keep coming back to. Our son here when he was a baby, he visited a lot. Other names are Ron and Sue Dwyer Moss. Lives and connect you with them as well. And the last time we were here was sabbatical. It was a short one though. After steering the hind end of the church for about 10 years, I had a breakdown of sorts, burnout. That's what you call a nervous breakdown, because it was anxiety out of control physically. Mm-hmm. Some medication for about a year, and I came here to sort of just find some ground and for a little while. So it was a big part of the healing, which was taking a long time. So grace happens too.
My name is Annie, and I first came to Holden in 99, and I was here for 3 weeks. And then that was after my freshman year in college. And at that point, I just wanted to stay and wrap up school. And, but I didn't. I just knew that it was something I was going to do as soon as I could, as soon as I finished school there. I wanted to come back for a year. And so I did in 2003, and I was a lead cook shortly after I got here, I realized that I wanted to be an Maverick because I didn't like smelling like onions all day. And, you know, we don't shower much at Golden, so more. And I wanted to tear things apart and build things and know how Oz worked. But, you know, I stuck with the reprint job, and it was really great. My object is a wooden spoon, and I think what, as I sort of eased into village life, that sort of became apparent to me was the rhythm of the day-to-day, and I think the meals of Golden sort of anchored that rhythm in a way that was really profound for me. And it was really wonderful, once I opened myself to the gift of being a part of that, to be in the kitchen, to bake the bread for the Eucharist, to you know, prepare the feast meals, and to you know, hear people come up to the window and say, this was good meal. And to kind of be part of what I think is an important image and metaphor for the body of Christ and the breaking of bread. And anyway, so it was just, I think I sort of learned to be open to the sacredness of work and open to the sacredness of rest. And just, I feel like at Golden I learned how to be more present with the moment that I was in. And this was really important for me because I'm kind of a big picture person, so much so that I often lose that day-to-day, and I'm often pretty blind to what I think of as calling because I get so big picture oriented. And the spoon is actually made for me by a man named Dan Heckner, and he was up at Holden with his wife Margaret on teaching staff. And they are organic farmers in Wisconsin. And I got to talk to them over the winter, or the month that they were there. And I ended up being an intern for them for the 6 months after I left Holden. And he likes to, you know, he does woodworking, so he made me a spoon. And which he did in probably about half an hour. But it was wonderful to transition out of Holden that way because they were people who still kept, I think, that ethic of simplicity, that commitment to community. And it was so hopeful for me to feel like in 30 years, I could still have this. I could still have a life that resembled the life that I had in Holden. And the other thing that happened that summer was when I wasn't out picking onions, I was tearing down a barn because they had this old dilapidated barn that wasn't useful because it was about to fall down. And there was an Amish community nearby, and Dan had kind of been scheming and had decided to, you know, try to have a barn building at the end of the summer. So for the first couple months of the summer, we tore down the barn. And for the next couple of months, we tried to salvage what was salvageable, you know, in materials. And there was a lot of planning, a lot of preparation, and the members of the CSA farm came out in September, the end of September, and we had this two-day barn raising with the help of this Amish community, which it was incredible. And I think, as I was tearing down boards beginning of the summer and tearing out nails of plywood, and then, you know, that two-day event when I was in charge of preparing meals because we had many meals for hundreds of people, it sort of reminded me of my time at Golden and how I had just been, I think, built back up.
My name is Tasha, and I was here 84 through 86, living with my family, and I was the first and second grade. And when I think of my time as a child here, what really sticks out to me is imagination. And you just become creative, because you're in this beautiful place, and there's no TV, there's no radio, and as a child, you kind of stick to those things. But here at Holden, you have this wilderness and this opportunity to work with people and create with people. So as a lot of people know, we have the Holden humor. Try to find ways to get entertainment and other things and out there in the real world. So we have the talent shows. And so what my talent was reciting poems from Shel Silverstein. And this seemed to be what I really enjoyed doing. And I would go to the costume shop and create costumes. My favorite poem was The Crocodile to the Dentist. I still know it by heart, actually. So it was great because I would do this on my own, but I'd also invite some of my schoolmates to do it with me. And the other times I've been here too, I learned to be creative, and people would offer up their talents and, you know, or do music or singing and, you know, improvise with people and be on porches and play music. And so just being creative in my life has been a huge influence, and Holden was influenced in that. And just kind of looking beyond, just kind of opening your mind up to creativity. I just was a sense of freedom here in that respect. Imagination.
Is that poem long? Can you do it?
I can do it. Yeah. I'll try to remember it. So the crocodile went to the dentist, and he sat down in the chair. And the dentist said, "Now tell me, sir, why does it hurt in there?" And the crocodile said, "I'll tell you the truth. I have a terrible, terrible ache in my tooth." And he opened his jaw so wide, the dentist's teeth lying right inside. The dentist laughed. Oh, isn't this fun? As he pulled the teeth out one by one, and the crocodile cried, "You're hurting me so, please put down your paws and let me go." But the dentist just laughed with a ho, 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 and said, "I still have 12 to go. Oops, that's the wrong one, I confess." But what's one crocodile, two more of us? And then suddenly the jaws went snap. The dentist was gone right off the map. And where he went, no one could guess. He left no forward in your dress. But what's one dentist, more or less?
Into a life where ELCA said, "We can't handle that." And so now we're sort of going forward with our own vision. I wanted to mention that a little at length, even though it doesn't have much to do with Holden, partly because of the sermon last week. So that's what can happen to a congregation that takes those steps, although I think more and more often they're trying to just punish individual pastors because that's easier. Anyway, I make my living as a technical writer at software companies, and I also write fiction. When I got laid off from one of my jobs in 2002, I got a chance to finish the first draft of a novel that I had been working on for a couple of years. And being on unemployment for the rest of that year and sort of through the winter enabled me to finish the first draft and start on my revisions. But I knew that I needed some concentrated time or I'd never really get the thing all put together. So I had been to Holden as a guest a few years before, and I knew that they had such a thing as a sabbatical, so I wrote to Holden and asked if I could do that here. And so I came up for a few weeks in 2003 as half work, half sabbatical. Part of the reason why I did that half and half is because I also really wanted the experience of being on staff, which I'll talk about in a minute. But as far as the sabbatical itself went, the most important thing for me was solitude. It wasn't community. It was the chance to sit in my room by myself and work on my book. And a lot of my process sort of involves working very intensely for 45 minutes and then falling into a nap completely exhausted, and then being able to get up again, get right back to it. And having my own room and having the solitude to do that was just terrific. Nobody bugged me, nobody told me I had to be anywhere, because I worked in the kitchen in the morning, and then after that it was just free. And I got a terrific amount of work done, and I really finished my revisions. So the object that I have now is a piece of manuscript. It's actually not from that book. It's from the book that I'm working on now, and which I'm working on here in the afternoon after we get done with our work here. But since I had it with me and I've already gone through this part, which is all marked up by people in my writing group, I thought I'd bring that as a symbol of what I did on my sabbatical. But the other thing that I want to talk about is the experience of being on staff, which I think if you're studying what Holden is about and you're ignoring the experience of being on staff, I think you're really missing what Holden is about. Even when I came here for the first time as a guest in 2000, I think, for a week with my church group, I sensed that there was a big division of all the people here in Holden. Because I could kind of toddle around as a guest and go to classes, but I saw the other people walking around in a sort of important way, and they seemed to have kind of secret knowledge about what was really going on. I even said to somebody at that time, you know, I get the feeling that if you're not on staff here, you're not really in the community. And this person who I was talking to, who had been up here before, said, you know, you're really right about that. So when I wanted to do a sabbatical here, and also because I think it needed to be more affordable for me, I did the half work, half pay thing. So I was in the kitchen for 6 hours, or for 3 hours, 6 days a week. And my experience in the kitchen was terrific. I got a chance to work with people, and I felt like I really had a chance to contribute. But I also got the experience of being on staff and experiencing what that in-group was like. And I started to understand why people walked around so accordingly. And it's not just because you are aware of all the stuff that the guests are not aware of, but it's because the staff is enormously cliquish and really has just, I think, what I found a fascinating pecking order that depends on how long you've been here, or how many summers you've come back, or whether your parents met here, or how important your job was, because at the staff meetings, you really got a lot of interesting subtext, for example. That winter, the woman who had run the housekeeping had a nervous breakdown because nobody gave her any appreciation for housekeeping work. And I could see that the work that the men did was valued so much more highly than the work that the women did, more than typical women's work. And all this, it really kind of appalled me. So when everybody talks about
unity at all in. That's what I think.
Wow, wow.
Now, I also had an experience with grace. 2 days before I left was a Sunday, and I got invited to be part of the servers at communion. And they gave me the bread. And so during communion, I had this amazing experience of everybody who had related or not related with me, everybody who I knew had a secret story or a conflict with somebody else or who had not talked to me because I wasn't cool enough, they all came up. And I had this experience of these faces just coming up to me completely open. And it's the first time I had met those people in a completely open way. It was because I had the body of Christ to give to them. And that was an enormously healing thing for me to experience with all those people on staff, where I could see them as broken people who were coming up to get the body of Christ. And that's why I think it's so strange that they don't have daily Eucharist here. And get at least an opportunity to offer daily Eucharist, to give people the opportunity to have that healing every day. Because I think that healing happened not because of Holden, but despite Holden. Because it was the Eucharist.
Dave from Raleigh, North Carolina. And this place is different from North Carolina. For sure. I did the same sabbatical sort of thing that you did, Mark. 2 weeks teaching and then 2 weeks were mine. They had half tuition that I still didn't pass up. I remember a lot of things about transitions during my time here. It was the first month of a 3-month sabbatical, so I got to spend September here, which I understand is a transition month all by itself. So I got to experience the end of the summer program and the beginning of the winter program. And that was kind of neat. I remember, day after day, new people coming into the community just full of excitement and energy and fresh. And I got so worn out. Where are you from? What do you do? I kind of avoided those people coming off the bus in the first couple of meetings because they're all eager to get to know me. I've been doing this for 2 weeks, man. That's it. So I found myself gravitating toward the staff because I didn't have to tell that story again. That's an interesting transition. I hadn't thought about it. You put it in nice terms for me to see that. But I remember the transition. I remember the all the preparation for sabbatical. I'm a parish pastor and half of a clergy couple. So we did a lot of work. In fact, it was about a 2-year preparation process in the congregation to do the sabbatical. And I remember about 2 weeks into it, my back stopped hurting. And I really slept a lot better. I thought, that's what they're talking about. That's what I never get to do. So it was a remarkable kind of experience for me. My object is not a stone. You probably can't see it. It's clay. I made my first pinch pot. And it wasn't good. My kids did better than that in third grade, And I thought I'd bring it, but I thought a pot would break. So I bought a flat one that I could bring on the plane easily. But same material. This was leftover. And the imprint is one of the cedar trees on the end of it. It's a nice kind of imprint, so several things packed into one here. But what the theme that was in my mind when this idea was proposed by the coordinators was, this place is a lot of firsts for me. My first work with clay. It was really neat. I remember the sensation. I hate to dance. I was a jock, I can use my body okay. I hate to dance, but there was a workshop here that used physical expressions of prayer. I thought, what the heck? I'll give it a shot. It was a marvelous kind of experience. They're very freeing, very liberating for me to do that with no repercussions. If I could do that in the parish, holy smokes. That's scary to think about. But I could do that here. So this place offers that kind of safe place to try those things out and to try what people offered for me. A couple of things that I remember, change happens here every day, a change in the community. Well, you know all the jokes about Lutherans and change. But here, change is seen as a positive. And in fact, change becomes part of the community. What's change going to bring today? Is what kept going through my mind. And I began to welcome that. And who's going to get off the bus today? I didn't want to talk to him, but but after a time, you know, there are occasions to interact with folks. Occasions to interact with people in a whole bunch of different contexts. The other thing that really sticks out is this place really knows how to celebrate. Celebrate the simple stuff. I was here for the first day of school. Yeah, get that little school bus and run around the loop here. This is really wonderful. Wonderful is not the first thing that comes to my mind. Yeah, all the costumes, if you've been here, people dress up in costumes. The whole community celebrates the first day of school. Oh, what a marvelous thing. And over the period of a month, there were a number of occasions where the whole community just gathers and celebrates in a particular way. And looking for occasions to celebrate and ways to mark things as special by celebrating them. Of course, you take down mountain. I took down mountain. And the idea of change being really a catalyst for many good things. I took that down mountain. And being able to try out some first things feels immediately applicable in the parish. Let's just try it, see what happens. If it doesn't work, we don't have to do it again. But we can try it, and we have nothing to lose. That was a very good thing. So, you know, my piece of clay is a kind of
My name's Herb, and my object is a symbol with my name on it. And inside are two different things. One was the being welcomed, and I appreciate the welcome that I received. This was from Jean, and she welcomed me with my work orders and told me that I would work in the kitchen. And the other is when I left, she gave me a card with the note on it saying goodbye. And between that was my experience here at Boulder. I began my sabbatical here. I had a 3-month sabbatical, and I really didn't know much about Boulder at all. My intention was to come here to relax and detox and read. My sabbatical study would be with the Romans. And in fact, I would go to Rome with a group of pastors and to study the first century community life in that city. And so I had a bunch of books I brought with me to read. I didn't realize there was a library here today. And I needed to get away from the parish life. And just to have that time to begin to rest. And I thought coming, being dropped into the middle of the woods would be an opportunity to do that. And so in my work, I just wanted to do something I could use my hands. I worked in the kitchen. And Jean was she's my boss. I mean, she was the one who organized the kitchen staff at that time. And we chopped onions together and we put potatoes and baked bread and prepared meals. And it breaks a ton of talking. And she was someone who just was real authentic. She laughed, she cried, she told stories. But she left me with the impression that that people really matter and to take time and to realize that. My experience here was in May, so it was between seasons, so there weren't people coming into the study. And you're not a guest during that time. You go part of the community. And right away, became part of the community. That evening, there was a time for the community to come together to talk about issues. And if you were on camp or if you're a village here, you were part of that community. And I thought, wow, this is really a different understanding of community, because often you have to work your way into community. And here, just a new person coming to be part of that. As the week went on, 2 weeks went on, I realized it was a very inclusive community. And when I thought about inclusive before, it was so that you have the right quota of people of color and men and women and those kinds of things to be inclusive. It was inclusive of ideas, and everybody's idea seemed to matter, and I appreciated that. I had my time to read when I was here, and I read all my books, and I rested a lot and hiked, and I think when I got this card and left, it was what I took away from Holden was that community is inclusive, and I needed to hear it in a fresh way. Holden taught me to be better at being a truth teller, and I think it's the place where I try to get at the root of truth and what matters. And as a pastor and a teacher and preacher, I appreciate that. So I was welcomed and sent.
I'll go next. I'm Dawn Coffey, and when I was preparing to come here, it was just being very difficult to get out of where I live and get here. And so about an hour before I left, I went up to the attic because I figured there might be something up there that related to Holden. I'm supposed to have this object, and I'm not a keeper, I don't keep stuff, but I did. I found this up there, and the little cross, and as I was driving up here from western Nebraska, it seems like wherever there's a hill or a knoll in western Nebraska or South Dakota, the farmer, the rancher, puts a cross up there, and I don't even really like crosses. I think as a symbol, it's. I think there's other ways to convey the gospel that are much more imaginative, and I think maybe it's overused a little bit. So I was coming up and looking at these crosses all the way, thinking, well, that's what I've got to explain. I came in the 70s on staff, and later I came as part of the Christian Life Enrichment Program. But I got here, and I was from farm town Minnesota, and I was just kind of taken aback by this place. It just overwhelmed me, and I wasn't even sure I liked it for several weeks. I was just, what is this? And there was a guy down in the pool hall, and I don't even remember his name, except he was called Pool Hall Bob. And he made the popcorn, and that's all I remember. But for some reason, he was very kind to me. And I guess, you know, I was 19, and we were all so beautiful. I think he just liked me, and he asked me to go on a walk with him, and I did. And out there at 10 Mile Falls, he gave me this. And then the next day, he left. and so it really, I don't know, out of everything that one could save from Holden, why I have this is the only one thing I do. But then it occurred to me, well, this is the cross. And what happened here to me was that the story of the gospel took on meaning in this place. And not that it didn't before that. I grew up in a church, and I went to a church, and I had wonderful pastors, but something happened here, and I don't even know how to put words to it. And I have to say, it was the preaching. And it was mainly Carol Henry, the preacher and director at that time, who just made it somehow. It was his gift to make it crystal clear that God is love, and we are love, no strings attached. And somehow that message came to me very strongly. And one of the quotes he or somebody here had was that we're full of holes, but we're standing in the stream of living water. And being here and having the creek right down there, and you just visualize, I am full of holes. And I always have been, but until I got here, I was always trying to plug them up somehow. You know? I just thought that's what we're supposed to do, just get rid of our holes. And I'm full of holes, and we stand out there in Tenmel Creek and just let that living water stream through the holes. And that was I guess you'd call it a paradigm shift in thinking. And my life has been changed ever since then.
I'll go next. I'm Melissa. I guess mine flows from Dawn a little bit because I have two little pieces of stick, which are can or cannot be a path. And I wanted to thank Mark also for, because I think it's easy to, you know, just romanticize Holden and not, and I realize that I think part of, for me, feeling, Holden let me feel a part of something really important and meaningful, but there is that side of when you feel a part of something, is that because, you know, you're drawing a line of, you know, there is that inside or outside or sometimes feeling here, which I think is important for us to examine. But, so, I brought these two little pieces of larch wood. I think they're from Upper Lyman Lake. And I didn't think that hard about what to bring. I have a bigger piece of larch in my windowsill, which is sort of like an altar. I have lots of, at home, I have some candles and rocks and sea glass and pieces of wood and different things that I've collected from places and holy things to me across from Guatemala. But it was kind of significant. So I had a bigger piece, but I knew that would break if I brought it. And I didn't take any notes, and I didn't, I just kind of said, I'm going to bring this. And that was sort of symbolic of Holden for me, because Holden was where I started listening to my gut and what I now would call calling, right? Which I, you know, thought that was only something you heard on televangelist shows before I came to Holden, was the sense of call. but it was a time where I, you know, I was, when I first came to visit Holden, I actually came to visit Stacy in March of 99, and I immediately, like, felt this really strong pull to this place, and I kind of, like Annie said, like, wanted to drop what I was in the middle of nursing school, and I rearranged my schedule so I could come here that summer, and I was in tears at the end of that summer, like, trying to decide if I should just drop out of school and come back and be on long-term staff, and, you know, I just felt this amazing pull of this call to be here. But so the way this relates to so I was used to following, like, what I call the should voice in my life, and Holden was the place where I allowed my heart voice, my passion voice, to come out. And so that's why I just followed my gut feeling and didn't, like, try and plan out exactly what I was going to say. I don't know, a little bit more trust in the spirit I came, and in myself, came from Holden, being a Holden. So it's a large branch because probably a lot of you know this, but the larches are the only they're the only evergreen that's not really evergreen, I guess. You know, the needles turn yellow and fall off in the winter.
Deciduous.
Yeah, deciduous evergreen or whatever.
Deciduous conifer.
Is that the official term for it?
Well, it's boxes of needles, but it's a conifer.
Yeah. And you can tell it's a larch because it has these little knobs, and the needles grow in kind of bunches out of the knobs, and they only grow on,
as far as I know, like up on high ridges. And and this I think is from Upper Lyman Lake, which is one of my favorite places in the whole world. First time I went there, I remember there being chunks of ice floating, and I guess it still feels like glacier gets smaller and smaller, but I felt like there could just be penguins kind of swimming out. When being at Holden for the seasons, in the fall, I remember that there are these yellow ridge lines of the mountains, and I'm from the East Coast, and so fall is very different here than, you know, no maple trees really, but the colors are still spectacular, bright red huckleberries. The seasons, I guess it became impossible to ignore at Holden how the natural seasons of the natural world started to falling into rhythm with the seasons of the liturgical year. And that is kind of a parallel to, in my life, how like being a spiritual person. When I came, I was 25, I think, when I first came to Holden. And I was considering myself spiritual but not religious, kind of an object seeker. And when I was in Seattle, I'd gone to Quaker Meeting and Unitarian Universalist Church, and I always knew spirituality was important to me, but I didn't think I could be Christian because I thought I had to believe everything too literally, and that I couldn't. I had trouble reconciling faith and reason in the Christian Church. But so I came to Holden, and all the parts of who I was passionate of, everything I was passionate about, and who I was, kind of fit together with this place. You know, the wilderness, which is where I found God, spirit, and living intentionally, simply, and in community, and intergenerationally, and concerned about the environment, and, you know, even though sometimes it's hard to live, in reality, it's hard fully to be engaged in social justice while you're living at Holden, even though it's a very big emphasis. In a way, it's like, I don't know. Sometimes it's hard to live it out fully, but having that value at least is very important. And then having all that tie in with a faith community, where it was okay to ask a lot of questions. And I remember one time in particular, actually, somebody talked about this. Maybe it was you, Will, about scriptures opening up. I remember Jamie Brown, who was a plumber that year. I was in a small group with her, and we were talking about the loaves and the fishes. And I was 26 years old, and I had never before heard someone say that her interpretation of the loaves and the fishes was, I guess, the communitarian interpretation, where, you know, each person shared the little bit they had, or once people saw other people sharing, they each shared, and the miracle was in that sharing. It wasn't just this magic interpretation of a miracle, but it was the, many layers to the interpretation of the miracle. Sometimes people are like, what? You know, you never thought of that before if you were 26? But it was really, revolutionary for my theology, my spirituality. I felt like the Bible was totally blown wide open. Like, I can really bring together my mind and faith in a way that I didn't think I could before. And I guess the large, and you know, so that started a journey where I'm now. I have 3 classes left, and I'll be finished with seminary, and I'm on a ordination track in the UCC, and probably headed toward chaplaincy, hospital chaplaincy. The large, because it symbolizes just that, the seasons with the church, and I guess the coming together of my, you know, the outline or the puzzle pieces of who I am with the community of faith and with being Christian. And also something about bravery and you know, going up to those high mountain passes.
Well, it's down to a few of us, so I guess I'm good.
I wasn't saying we were the last. In court, it's come a while, but as my sister Tasha is probably known. We came up here in the mid-80s. Our dad was the business manager for a few years here, and my mom was here. And we had the older sister, but she was in college at the time. And I was 12 and 13, so you can imagine a pretty rough time to be at Holden. And it was like, I guess it's a rough time for anyone at that age, but anyways, my solace was music, and this is an old YouTube tape, and it's one of the last cassette tapes I still have. And when I hear the first four albums by U2, it totally reminds me of Holden, because I used to use my Walkman and I would go skiing by myself. And so I guess just my item was just a connection to this music with this place really connects with me. So I guess that's pretty much what it's about. I guess that's what it is. I guess if you're not familiar with YouTube, you've probably heard of Bono before. You know, he has like $400 pair of sunglasses. I think that like the path that YouTube went on I feel really connected with the path that they went on. And every album is connected with my life. And so I guess I would encourage you, if you haven't heard YouTube, to check them out. As you know, Bono more recently has become more notorious for his social justice issues. He's taking his spirituality. He was raised in Ireland with I can't remember if it was his mom or his father was a Catholic, and his mother was a Protestant, and he's definitely connected to the Christian lifestyle, but he's a really non-dogmatic person, and that's kind of how I try to live my life. Like, I don't really identify with the church as much. I just try to, just live my life with my Christian values, but I don't really like to, tout it, or I don't go to church. And I feel connected to their music and all their lyrics about all these different times in my life. And then also, I think with Bono, his work, if you're not familiar, he's been very influential with the Gates family and with the Gates Foundation. And the Gates Foundation, I think, my wife and I saw U2 when they came to Seattle last year, and Bill Gates was sitting like 10 rows in front of us. And then about 6 months later comes this announcement that Bill Gates is retiring from Microsoft, and he's going to take all his money and put it into this Gates Foundation and work on this Africa program, which is really, I think Bono is the one who really started this whole thing and really brought the awareness. And then Warren Buffett joined in, and he's donating hundreds of millions of dollars to the Gates Foundation, and they're working on this huge thing where they're working on vaccinations, all this type of stuff. So I guess I'm just really, I feel real connected to Bono and to U2 and, where they have taken their popularity and their success and what they've done with it. And I guess I would just encourage people to check them out. So that's it.
Well, it's taking me this long because I don't want to be too long. So I thought, maybe if I wait longer, I'll be squeezed. But I'm Mark. Marco the cook. I actually brought my chef's hat. But